The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Now, this is Winners and Sinners when we look back at the week that was with a few twists. I'd be delighted to be joined, as always, by Off The Ball's Cameron Hill and Today FM's Alison Curtis. Guys, you are very welcome. Cameron, we might kick off with your winner of the week.
Yeah, so my winner this week is Irish comedians. So people might be aware that the great comedy gathering that is the Edinburgh Fringe Festival has kicked off over in Scotland. And there are some really great acts going over this year from Ireland, some going for the first time. So Ali Ryan, a Dublin comic, is going over to do her show Nothing Personal, her first ever solo show. She'd done spots over there before, but it's about the kind of her experience as a female comic in the Irish comedy scene. I saw a preview of it in Chaplin's a few weeks ago. It is brilliant. Give us
obviously I'm not asking you to tell her joke, but what's the style of
basically
comedy?
She uses her dating experiences from Tinder or whatever to inform her comedy, and then starts going on dates to get material, and it ends up having pretty negative consequences for her character. But I really hope she brings it home and gives it a run at the Dublin Fringe, because it's definitely worth seeing.
Really funny.
Really, really funny. She's got it.
Is Irish comedy in a good place at the moment? Because, I mean, we've had success in this area for quite a long time. There's a lot of high-profile names who have done well internationally.
Yeah, well, there's a really interesting development earlier this year in March, that comedy was finally added to the Arts Act. So that means that it gets Arts Council funding and it's recognised as an art form. So it gets the same funding that something like a theatre production or an Amdram or other different artistic endeavours are eligible for. And what that means is that you can fund, say, a production team, you can fund, say, various different production parts, renting venues, and also mentorship, because for years, and I've had very, very small experience in the Irish comedy scene, but you are either paying out of your own pocket or relying on the good nature of everybody in the scene to give you mentorship. And they are very good natured people, and they're so giving of their time. But being able to actually access this funding now means that young and up and coming Irish comics will be allowed to thrive because of the system and not despite it.
I do have to ask, have you done a spell of comedy?
I've done the odd bit of improv, Shane.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it as terrifying as it looks?
It is. But then the odd thing, because improv is kind of the most debasing of all the comedy art forms, because so much of it is, it's completely instinctive. So much of it falls flat and you feel terrible afterwards. But when you're in a groove and you've got the chemistry with your troupe, oh, it is the best feeling. So
I can imagine when people are roaring laughing along with you,
and you're like, "This is just coming out of I'm discovering this at the same time as you guys." But it's working.
Alison, have you had any experience?
I was asked to speak at something, and just my natural wit and charm came out, and it ended up being a stand-up routine. No, it was basically a bunch of us together in the Workman's, and my topic was Canada versus Ireland, Canadians versus Irish people. Obviously, Irish people came out in a better light, and it just naturally flowed. And like you said, when it's just coming out of you, you're like, oh, people are enjoying this. This is kind of funny.
Yeah. The only thing I can compare it with that I've done is I've done a few best man speeches.
Mm. Well, that's a good comparison.
And it is terrifying. I found it really unnerving, I have to say. But at the end of when it's over and it's gone well, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, and like you do just have to bomb, and that's just kind of part of it sometimes, that some things will just fall flat, and it's how you learn to read the room and to grab something that is actually working and to continue with it or to drop it, because timing is so important. But I just wanted to mention Ailish McCarthy, who did drive this recognition for a 3-year campaign. I think she was on Moncrief maybe late last year talking about trying to get comedy recognised, and she actually made it into a play. And the Arts Council went to the first night, and it was quite critical of, why did this take so long? And the members of the Arts Council who went along said, that was great. That was absolutely brilliant. So they can recognise, I think it was genuinely an oversight, the comedy hadn't been recognised up until this point. But it's good news for Irish comics, I think.
Could you ever see yourself going back into that area?
No.
In a word.
We'll see.
Okay. Alison, give us your winner of the week.
This is quite different now. And something that actually Kira would probably be able to guide me on a little bit more. But science is my winner because there's been a recent development with a condition called preeclampsia, which is, some people will know, is a condition that unfortunately is a very serious thing that develops during pregnancy. I had that and I decided to be really unique and go on to develop post-eclampsia. So I had it forever. But just this popped up in my timeline this week and I was really fascinated by it because so little research has been done on it and it is the biggest threat to maternal health when, you know, it develops. But it came out of a dermatology lab. So it was a man, a Swedish man. I'm going to attempt his name, will I?
Yeah, do. Absolutely.
Johan Gudjonsson. And he Johan's the right part. He basically was looking at how autoimmune diseases seem to be more prevalent in women. And he had a chance conversation in a corridor with another scientist. See, people with these minds, these brilliant minds, just blow my mind.
And but also, like, this is why it's important everyone doesn't work from home.
Yeah, exactly. It's true.
Because he had a conversation with another brilliant mind. And then
Yeah. And so she was looking at autoimmune diseases as well. And they came up with, you know, a conversation came about. And he's like, look, I'm just going to go and investigate this more. I'm going to look, you know, talk to people in immunology, people who specialize in cardiac care with women. Placenta, everything. And they discovered through skin cells that there's a link to, so the placenta causes everything that causes the problem with preeclampsia, that they've isolated a gene. So in layperson's terms, because I'm a layperson, they've isolated a gene. And by isolating this, maybe we could go on to prevent this, which would be incredible. Wow. Because it is, like, it's life-threatening. Like, I was in serious trouble.
Very scary, yeah.
Yeah, I was in ICU for 5 days in the rotunda and like it is terrifying. And because there's no actual, like it can onset very quickly. And the only thing that they can really test is protein in urines and blood pressure and keeping track of that. So to isolate this gene and maybe eradicate it, because even third world countries, like I had the rotunda, which is the most amazing maternity hospital in the country. And if you don't have access to that. So it was exciting to see this. And just brilliant minds.
Amazing. Can I ask if I'm not asking too personal a question? And excuse my ignorance, post-eclampsia, I didn't even know it was a thing.
So pre-eclampsia is the delivery of the baby is supposed to solve it. And then there's a very small percentage. I think 3 was the percentage that I remembered they said that the delivery of the baby doesn't solve the problem. So your vital organs, like your liver and kidney, are still under duress and my blood pressure was just through the roof. So it's a guessing game with meds and how to balance it out and which ones your body reacts to and stuff like that. But it was really traumatic and it is for a lot of women. Some women have it and are able to go through a pregnancy again. I couldn't face it again. But I have to say, reading that was very encouraging for future generations.
Wow. So I presume we still have a way to go, but this potentially could pretty much eradicate it.
Yeah. And there's blood tests now to test if you're going to be likely to develop preeclampsia, which as far as I know, wasn't around when I had Joan. So that's in 15 years that advancement's been made.
Okay. That is good news.
Science people.
Great minds. When they get together, it's amazing what they can do, Cameron.
Absolutely. And I think there is a feeling of a greater awareness of the actual various complications that can stem from pregnancy. And I think it's really important, and I must apologize on behalf of the male population that we haven't been as invested as we would have been, but Sibo Flamont, one of the French rugby players, didn't play the opening Six Nations game against Ireland this year because his wife, they were trying to conceive and she suffers from endometriosis. And there was such a great conversation around my mates who watch rugby around what is endometriosis and how does it actually affect people. And I just think the more we are curious about this and actually asking questions like that, it puts this all into context and just how difficult and how crazy it is and how ignorant we've been up to this point as the other half of the population as to what women actually go through.
Yeah. And then you still have a player being criticised because he dares go home from the World Cup and miss a match because he wanted to be at his partner or wife's giving birth, which is incredible in this day and age, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the other side, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so we still a lot of ground still to make up, I think, isn't it, Cameron?
Absolutely.
Okay, we are going to take a break now to get the news headlines with Eamon. Over to you, Eamon. And you're listening to Winners and Sinners. We look back at the week that was with a few twists. We're joined, we have been joined, and still with us is Cameron Hill and Alison Curtis. Alison, your sinner of the week.
So, Rose of Tralee, the Dublin Rose, she's faced a backlash online when it was announced that she was going to be representing Dublin. Again, here, why am I doing this to myself, challenging myself with pronunciations today? Suad Mouge. And she's originally from Sligo. She's a medical science student. And I'm sure you guys have talked about this and seen it. But she is a woman of colour. And basically, you can imagine the online chatter around her representing Dublin and the Dublin Rose. And so that's just, I know we know it's all still happening. But when, you know, the Rose of Tralee should be pure joy. I know it does have its critics and it does, you know, some people think it's stuck in time. But it is just a joyful event that happens every year and it honours people from across the world with Irish ties. And just to know that that was bubbling underneath is just tedious.
This is a Sligo... Sligo-born,
but she's representing Dublin.
Representing Dublin.
Yeah, Rose.
And getting abuse because she is...
A woman of colour, yes, yeah.
Wow, yeah. That is...
But she said when it happened, she spoke about it at the time. She's like, I literally, the positives are way louder than the negatives. But when it happened and I got this onslaught of abuse, I wasn't surprised at all. I was upset, shocked, but not, you know, surprised, which is a sad reflection, isn't it? And she said, it's just a reality of living in Ireland and growing up in Ireland as a person of colour. I know, you'd want to hope we'd moved on.
Yeah, and do you know what? Unfortunately, and I've had a few conversations about this recently with different people. I was chatting to an Indian taxi driver a few weeks ago, and he says it's got worse in the last few years.
Yeah.
Now, again, he did say, look, he said, it's a minority. He said, I'm not suggesting everybody is like this, but he said... He gets it quite regularly. Go back to your own country. A lot of this kind of stuff.
But it is funny, when I first moved here, so I moved here in February 1999, and I was like, wow, it's like everyone seems open and accepting. But it wasn't until like, say, 3 or 4 months after, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, who are they open and accepting to? Like, that it was very, coming from Canada, I was, you know, recognized it was very, what's the word I'm looking for? The society was quite...
Not diverse. Yeah, kind of.
So there wasn't the reason to have these fireball conversations, so to speak. But now we've become a really diverse country, and in particularly Dublin and surrounding areas, well, across the whole country, and it's something we should be embracing.
Yeah. And like so many of those immigrants, Cameron, play such a huge role in our lives. Like, I was... Nearly this time last year, I spent a week in the Mater Hospital, and I probably said this on the show before, just like a lot of the staff were from different parts of the world. There was a doctor from Pakistan who had to do a really kind of nasty procedure, so he's basically putting a needle in my back, and he spent 20 minutes manipulating, gently massaging it to find the right spot to make it as pain-free and as comfortable as possible. I mean, just a wonderful man, and like... And then they have to walk out of the Mater Hospital and see tricolours all over the place. And I have to say, I hate that they've done that to our flag, my flag, your flag.
Mm. Well, you mentioned our flag, and I suppose like you only have to look at last night and what Rashida Adeleke was able to pull out in Birmingham as the representation of the good side of Ireland and what that entails and how proud she is to be from Ireland and how proud we are to have her as someone representing our country. Like, she's actually probably my favourite human at the moment because she's so open and raw and it's incredibly talented. And you just always think of when sports stars especially, and particularly female sports stars, particularly female sports stars of colour, that when things go badly and they don't quite level up, that like their DMs are just going to be a bloody nightmare for the next while. And it's awful to think about, and it's a terrible way to frame it. But I was so proud of her and everything that went on last night. And she is a huge part of it, and she reflects what I think the modern Ireland is.
We're not going to solve this here, obviously, but I don't know, what is the way forward here, Cameron, do you think?
I think it's not to give it oxygen, to be honest. Like, to, I know it's very, very hard, and it's especially hard if you're someone going through it, that every day you are... as a person of colour or someone who's come to this country as a second generation Irish or has parents who came to this country, that you do, you just have to live with this. And like, I don't know if I will ever have the answer, because I am a white, cis, male, straight. I'm probably the last person you need to ask, because it's just something that never factors into my thinking. But I honestly, I don't know. I don't have the answer. It's a Friday evening, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
do you know what?
I think there will be an answer.
Like, I'm a good bit older than you, Cameron. I'm also a good bit older than you.
I don't know how much.
Well, a fair bit. Awesome. But look, and the point that you came to Ireland in 1999. Like, I remember Ireland in the 80s when, like, there was 300,000 people leaving.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people leaving every year. And, like, the idea now that we are a country that is attracting immigrants, I feel an enormous sense of pride about
that. And Shane,
going
back to your story about the matter, everyone that looked after me in the rotunda for that 2 weeks I was there was mostly from another country.
But I love the idea of people coming here to build a life in Ireland, to build a new life, a better life for their children or whatever here. I'm enormously proud of that, yeah. But it's a sad reflection, it really is. But anyway, we wish the Dublin Rose really well.
She's
anyway.
The bookie's favourite, guys.
Is she?
Yes, ooh, yeah.
Wouldn't
definitely.
That be amazing?
Yeah, it would.
That would be absolutely amazing. Okay, let's move on to Cameron, your sinner.
Okay, so Leeds United, Man United, still bitter about them winning the Boyle Sports Cup United at our expense, but here we are in Croke Park. And it was one of the big talking points from that game was that a number of kids, not just one or two, managed to get onto the pitch before full time, and the game had to be stopped, and eventually normal time was finished and they went to penalties because these kids were going around getting selfies with the Manchester United players.
Oh.
And it was fun for a bit. I didn't see it on TV. There was as many, I think it's 8 on the pitch. And I'll caveat everything I say here by, these are kids. It's not the end of the world. It's a preseason friendly. But it just reminded me of how much pitch invaders really annoy me as an idea, especially adults going onto the pitch. Like, what are you doing? You know, have you no respect? And I don't like it for two reasons. One semi-serious philosophical point is the pitch, the track, the court, whatever, is sacred space as sport. If you want to run onto the pitch at Croke Park, become a really good inter-county footballer or a hurler or a camogie star. I know that sounds flippant, but it's meant to be for them. You earn the right to go onto that pitch. If you take the stadium tour of Croke Park, you're not allowed on the pitch.
And that's Aren't you?
No.
And I was about to just ask you
it's
that.
It's to preserve it, but also it's the idea of this being important. It's the idea of this being important. But on a more serious point, there was an incident last week at Talla Stadium when Dundalk were playing Shamrock Rovers, and
there was
Daryl Horgan,
unsavory.
Really unsavory. Daryl Horgan scored a goal against Shamrock Rovers, the home team, and a fan came onto the pitch to confront him. The fan had to be held back initially by the Dundalk teammates before security eventually escorted him off. But it just reminded me of the unsavory side of that. That as a player, if you see someone coming onto the pitch and they're charging for you and they seem angry, you don't know what that person's capable of doing.
Yeah.
You've no way of protecting yourself. You don't know what they have on them. They might be
you
armed.
Don't.
It's incredibly dangerous and would make you feel incredibly vulnerable. And
I agree with you. And I have to say, it always annoys me when, like at Ireland games, when somebody runs on the pitch and then the crowd cheer as they're being chased by the security.
Yeah.
And I'm going, why are you cheering this person? They went, like, they're delaying the game. They came on the pitch. There is a counter view, though, and we were chatting about it earlier in the meeting, and one of our team was talking about, you know, the GAA, like, a game, say a National League game in Castlebar or in Killarney, and the fans come on the pitch and the players sign autographs and all, and there's a nice kind of feel to that. I mean, do you lose a bit of something if you completely have this absolute rule about the pitch being sacred?
Maybe. And maybe that's something in our Irish sporting culture, that it does happen in GAA games and at the end of big finals, that they're celebrated and players are surrounded and mobbed by kids who just want to meet their heroes. And maybe you lose that by being a bit too draconian. But I just thought, like, 8 kids on Croke Park in a full sellout stadium is too many people to be letting onto the pitch.
I thought it had happened after, so the match was still in play.
Technically still in play, like
a few
minutes left.
How do we feel about animals invading the pitch? How do we feel about that?
Well, again, that's like something a you cat can't really or a control. Dog.
Have you not seen that?
Yeah, I have.
If,
I
watched if 8 or 9 dogs are going on, it's like, come on, dogs, respect the game. But on a semi-serious point, like that's a full packed Croke Park Stadium for a game of little consequence. In a month's time, we're hosting perhaps the biggest sporting event we'll see this century when Katie Taylor fights there. And if I'm Eddie Hearn and I've been listening to the figures that have been touted for the amount security is going to cost for this boxing event to take place there, I'm ringing up Peter McKinnon saying, hang on a sec, am I that assured that this is going to go off without a hitch? Because 8 kids just got on the pitch there.
Very difficult for security when they're kids, though, aren't they? Like it is. In some ways, it's trickier than if it's a full-grown man that you can rugby tackle to the ground or something. You can't really do that to a kid. It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, but one or two. I'd accept 1 or 8 kids is too many. Like, that's a systematic failing, I think.
They just went too far with the 8. Were they all pals? Did they figure it out together?
I don't know. I don't know where they came out. I didn't see it. They don't show it on TV, unfortunately, and I've heard mixed reports. But I just thought, it just reminded me how much of a dose pitching for eaters are.
What? That thing in the All-Ireland final after the final whistle where the fans all invade, that's gone now. And there was a lot of people, there was radio shows dedicated, a lot of people saying we've lost some of our tradition. If I have the right to go on the pitch to celebrate with my county and all that kind of stuff. I think that argument has kind of been had at this stage, so hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's tangential, but it's the same reason I hate when people, like, get a photo with a trophy. Look at the trophy with your hands or with your eyes, but don't lift it. Because it's meant to be important. Like, players who win the trophy should be allowed to lift the trophy, and only those players, I think.
And celebrate with each other.
Yeah, because it's symbolic of a huge achievement. And I just think you lose so much of that from a philosophical point of view. But there is a danger element to people being allowed on the pitch or being permitted to do it.
Okay, we'll take a short break there. Back with Alison and Cameron and Winners and Sinners in a moment.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Now you're listening to Winners and Sinners. We have Off the Balls, Cameron Hill, and Today FM's Alison Curtis. Alison, any other business for us?
Family dinners. So I think in the summer, in the summer months, you just kind of let it all go to the wayside. And we were away in Canada in June, and then July just kind of whizzed by. I was like, I don't even know what happened. But like, she didn't have dinner with us once, basically. My daughter Joan, she would disappear to her room, or I'd bring food up to her, whatever. Like, this ham would come around a door and I'd pass it to her. But last night I was like, just sit down with us, please. And the three of us sat down, and I got through a record amount of questions. She must have let me ask about 50. I was delighted. And I was like scrambling for the next question in my head, going, okay, let's keep this going, keep this going.
I should have made notes.
Yeah. And just, it was so fun. And it was like really cute. And it was one of the first times I looked at her where I could see, you probably did this with your children as well, like her face is even changing now. So I can see what she might look like when she's 25, as opposed to seeing a 10-year-old in her. And it was just, and her humor came through, and it was just the best. And it was like nice to have that time. And like, you do try and do that during the school year, maybe you make more of an effort, but during the summer we just hadn't done it.
Yeah.
So it was nice.
It is the best thing to do as a family, isn't it?
No phones. They all went away.
Yeah. And there is something about eating together. You do, like, it's funny, my wife used to always say when or maybe one of her sons and his pals would come around, and if she fed them, it was like they didn't know, they forgot she was there, and she would hear everything. They would chat at the table.
Yeah.
And they'd be all sorts of talk, and she would just be given the food and kind of listening. And
it's magical. And it's magical when, like, because it started off with yes, no answers, and I was like, oh, this isn't going any very well. And then just something, I think my husband must have asked the gateway question, and she just lit up, and then off we went. And it was like an hour and a half, just the three of us just sitting there and chatting. It was late, like it was 8 o'clock we sat down, but it was brilliant.
Yeah.
So family dinners.
And you know what? It's lovely as well if you can do it. And with the weather at the moment, we've had a few just sitting outside. Yep. Al fresco, is that the right term? And you tend to sit there way longer.
You do.
Because it's just...
Yeah.
You also tend to drink more wine, but that's not a good thing.
No, not on a school night.
Definitely not a correlation there at all.
That's
good to do.
But it's good. You get the good chats.
Yeah. Were family dinners a big thing when you were growing up?
Oh, they still are. Like, we meet up for Sunday dinner every week.
Do you?
Yeah.
Proper big roast, like, or?
Proper big roast, yeah. No, Mom always pulls it out of pulls it out every time. It's fantastic. And as you say, it's great to have that time where you just have the crack.
Yeah.
Like the chats that you can have and the chemistry and just everybody having a laugh at something or the things that would come out occasionally in small doses when you're with each other together. It just, you realize this is great fun. It, you guys are all the best.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think.
Do you all sit in the same places?
I do, yeah. Yeah. I insist upon it.
It's kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have the same fork. I'm that. I'm like, no, I can't eat with that fork.
Yeah.
It has to be that one with the same handle.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's
that's
just
next level.
Gonna be
met.
Yeah.
My eldest son complains because he sits opposite me, and I'm a bit of a stickler for manners, and he says it's just so unfair that I'm the one sitting opposite, and you're always calling me. Don't hold your fork so short. Yeah. But yeah. Look, family dinners definitely a good thing. So from family dinners to what are they? Yeah, Cameron.
So were you familiar with this concept? Have you ever heard of girl dinner as an idea?
I don't know if I have, and I am a girl.
It's this thing on hang on, winners, sinners, and dinner. it's this idea I only came across a couple of weeks ago, but apparently it's been around for a few years, called girl dinner. And what it basically amounts to is your leftovers. So it's a thing on TikTok where girls will take whatever's left in the fridge and create quote unquote dinner out of it. And the more incompatible the stuff, the better. So it can be cheese and bread as your dinner, but it can be all sorts of stuff. Like, it can be fish fingers with carbonara is your girl dinner. I think there's some cultural differences that you can't have anything cooked. It has to be just whatever's left in the fridge. But there's a really interesting discussion around it because it's on social media. There are various different interpretations. I read a Guardian article about it saying that a lot of these girl dinners that people are putting on Instagram, on social media, are suspiciously low-cal. And maybe that goes into the idea of thin-spo and skinny talk and lots of celery and peanut butter and apple. But there's a lot of really just incongruous food. And the point is to make it as kind of wild and wacky as possible, like the stuff that
I've
you're just
eating.
I've
heard of mom dinners, which is like you're literally only looking after yourself that night.
Yeah, and it's very...
And so maybe that's...
It's very personal and intimate, and it's individualistic.
Yeah.
And the two things
and
I like
effort.
About this... Well, the two things I love about it is the idea that it highlights that we're not all having Ottolenghi style incredible concoctions for dinner every week.
I like Ottolenghi style incredible concoctions.
I love it too, but there's a part of me that it's very performative, that it's like these recipes are always, well, if you don't have white truffle oil, just throw everything else out because this dinner's pointless now.
Yeah.
But the other side is, like, I'm disappointed in us lads that we didn't come up with this first, because I create weird concoctions. My brother's really good at it. He'll have southern fried chicken fillets and pasta with no sauce as his dinner, which is like, I think he would have won girl dinner.
Is that a good thing?
I know,
he would have been the Bourdain of girl dinner.
Well, I can remember being a really poor student and having literally no money one Sunday in a flat in Harold's Cross, and I had a tin of spaghetti, or not a tin of spaghetti, a pack of spaghetti, and a tin of beans. And I thought, yeah, well, tomato sauce, they should go well together.
Jeez.
Oh my God, did they not go well together?
No.
I mean, I should have just had beans on toast. Yeah. It would have been way nicer.
Yeah,
so I'm not convinced about these concoctions, I have to say.
I think it's great. I think it's amazing what appeals to people in their own specific way. Like, I could never eat my brother's dinner. I'm pretty sure county councils have been on to him to ask if they can use it as building material for flood defence, but it's just the driest thing in the world.
I like the low-effort side.
That's the funny thing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, particularly if you're, what did you call it, Mom? If you're just cooking for yourself.
Yeah, but also I've got the problem in my house that I'm the only veggie, so, and
do
also...
Do you have to cook a separate...
I kind of in the kitchen a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But also my husband describes some of my food as cardboard, but I like it. It's like vegan style
it's
food.
It's
my cardboard.
Okay, so the concept is, what do you say?
It's girl dinner.
Girl dinner.
Yeah, and there's girl dinner diaries on Reddit, which is a fantastic, if you have 30 minutes of your time, definitely delve into that. It's really fun.
Okay, you've been listening to Winners, Sinners, and as Cameron says, dinners as well. Thank you both to Cameron Hill and to Alison Curtis. That is our lot for today. Just before we go, I do want to thank our producer, Claire Collins, who is sadly leaving us after she's been in News Talk since 2013. She is one of the most popular people in News Talk. I can say that without any fear of contradiction. As somebody was saying earlier on, there is nobody, you will find nobody in News Talk who can say a bad word about Claire. She is a brilliant person, a brilliant producer. She's going to be hugely missed here, but we do wish her well in what she's going on to do. And she's staying in the radio business, so we wish her well in that, but she will be hugely, hugely missed here. That is our lot for today. Do stay tuned for Off the Ball. Tuara agus toga bogey.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.